how the recycling market is changing and how that affects all of us. Next time you go to toss that greasy pizza box or plastic bag into the recycling bin, stop. Chances are they can't be recycled. Neither can DVDs, plastic forks, or the lids from plastic drinks. Recyclers are asking people to assist them by becoming better educated about what can be recycled and what can't, because the current world market for recyclables is changing. Recyclers need to reduce the contamination in what they ship out in order to get the best price for it, or even a decent price at all. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we'll learn more about where your recyclables go, changes to the global market, and what we can all do to make the best of a challenging situation for recycling companies and the communities they serve. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. China recently restricted importation of certain recycled goods, and that move has left many in the recycling industry concerned about what will happen to recycled material in this country. Today, we're going to learn more about the global recycling market and get answers to your recycling questions. In the studio with me, Kevin Roach, who is CEO of Eco Maine, and joining us from our Bangor studio, Victor Horton, who's Executive Director of the Maine Resource Recovery Association. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about recycling? How conscientious are you? Do you think that you maybe now have been doing some things wrong? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And Victor and Kevin, I want to thank you both for being here. Kevin, I want to start with you. Tell us about Eco Maine. This is what, for old timers, used to call RWS, right?
That's right, back in 2006. It's been a while. But Eco Maine, we have 74 member communities, and we take recyclables, recyclable materials from those member communities as well as their trash. And we also have a very aggressive educational component where we have educators out on the street bringing people into our facilities as well as doing classroom presentations. The idea there is to get people to know what Eco Maine does and to really advocate for best practices when it comes to recycling in the home.
All right, Victor, tell us about Maine Resource Recovery Association. You have a lot of members as well, right?
Yes, we have about 160 members serving 70-some-odd recycling centers. We work with them mostly in their sorted materials, moving that to market. We also put on a big workshop every year, bringing together some of the vendors so people can ask questions, you know, right from the people they buy stuff from.
So is MRRA kind of like a wholesaler for all the small recycling centers? Do you gather the recycled material and sell it in bulk, or do you help them find buyers for the recycled material?
Well, some people think of us as a like the police, but we're not really that. We're more of a real estate agent, I guess. A lot of the towns have, you know, smaller amounts at a time. So what we'll do is we'll put together milk runs for some people to do, like, maybe they're plastic. It takes a long time to make a whole load. So we'll do like a 2 or 3 part pickup for them. Others with their paper goods, they just hold enough for fill a tractor trailer, and then we'll find them a market. We'll chase down the money, keep the weights, keep everything moving for them.
All right. It sounds challenging.
It can be at times.
Okay, so Kevin, why don't you talk? There's a big article in the New York Times last week. We've done a story here on Maine Public. What's going on in the global recycling market that's presented these new challenges? I know that, because I've interviewed you before, that it's always challenging. Yeah. This is never a piece of cake to sell recycled materials. But what's going on right now that's really changed things?
Sure. So three things I think have happened. First, supply and demand is out of balance. And the reason why it's out of balance is China has left the market. They basically have banned the importation of post-consumer recyclable materials by and large. The second thing that has happened is that newspapers have disappeared from the mix. Years ago, 10, 15 years ago, really newspapers were the item that drove recycling programs. The paper, those of us who still subscribe, the papers are very small. And so newspapers are no longer carrying these programs because there's so little newspapers out there. We've transitioned to digital. And then thirdly, contamination. Over the years, we've been kind of become more and more lax on putting trash or might be recyclables in with the recycling materials. And over time, that has become a bigger and bigger problem. And we got away with it because China didn't seem to care. They would take anything, and they would pay you money for that material, and they would pay you premiums for that. And so I think a lot of us, you know, kind of got used to allowing a high level of contamination. They're no longer allowing contamination in the markets that have some of the markets that have replaced China's demand for these recyclable materials are very, very are sticklers on contamination. They won't allow the 15% to 20% contamination levels that China used to allow. They're only allowing 4% and 5% contamination.
So, Kevin, you said China has gotten out of the market. Why did China get out of the market? Do they have enough recycling that's being generated within their own borders that they don't need the global market anymore?
Well, that's one of their ideas. Is they want to, they want to generate this material internally. But over the years, again, and this goes back, China's been working on this for the last 10 years, so it's really nothing new. It's just that in the last year, when they came out with the national sword, as they call it, that it really impacted communities such as the EcoMaine communities. But this has been going on for quite some time, and basically the Chinese government put a stop to it. They said, we're not going to take recyclable materials into our country that contains trash. Quite frankly, I don't blame them.
Victor, where are you finding buyers for the recycled materials from your 100-plus communities?
Many of our buyers are either domestic, New England. We work with Quebec. We have some southern states mills. And as Kevin said, we may not deal directly with China because if you look at Maine, we work with folks out like as far as Machias. It's not a real quick fix to get to the port. We do have the port in Portland, but there's not a lot of recycled paper going out of that. It has to go to Boston or even further. So we've just had to capitalize on whatever the mills, locally, I guess you'd call them. But another issue that faces us that people kind of forget about is this whole new electronic log system for the trucks. The minute that hit, we had mills that used to pick up, at the drop of a hat quickly, and now they can't serve Maine and they're located next door. And they're blaming it on the electronic logs, making it a lot harder to find truckers that can make the journeys when they need to.
So you have a lot of recyclables, it sounds like to me, that sit in one place for a long time before they can move on.
Yeah, the challenge is nobody wants it to sit because a lot of the facilities don't have a lot of storage space. They may have enough for a load, two loads at the max, and they're looking to move it within the next week. And sometimes when you're going long ways, you have to just wait quite a while to get it out of there.
Are things still ending up being recycled, or are there things that would have been recycled in the past that are ending up in landfills?
Some of the towns have talked about stopping, we'll pick on mixed paper. Right now, we can move it at a negative price, and some people they kind of forget that, garbage is a lot more negative than, say, 30 a ton that you're paying to get rid of it. So they're dropping that from their program. But we are able to still move it. It's just that the mills that pay for it don't pay enough to cover the freight from most of our locations in Maine.
So what you're saying is it costs communities money now to recycle. It's no longer something that generates income, but it doesn't cost them as much money as disposing of it, right?
Certain items, but it isn't quite as easy as that. You could take all the numbers, put them together. Say you pay 30 a ton to move something and the landfill or the incinerator might be 80. So that's 50 a ton different. Well, some of the folks, the smaller areas might cost more than 50 a ton to bale. So it's kind of like relative. Some of the items they end up getting paid back money for and other things cost, but it all depends on what it costs to run that facility, with the electricity, the baling wire and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like they have to, each one of them has to like run that cost accounting in their heads.
For EcoMaine, I mean, the cost, you know, right now for mixed paper, we're paying, you know, $50 a ton for to get it to market. On top of that, I've had to add sorters to make it a cleaner mix. So I've got nearly $100 a ton of operating expense into that. So you take the $100 plus the $50, that's $150 a ton. That's a huge swing from just a year ago when we were getting paid $100 a ton for this material. So the market over the last 12 months has really flipped.
Wow.
And that's what's so hard for these member communities is they're like, well, wait a minute. A year ago, you were paying me for this material, and now I have to pay? How come I have to pay? But it's not something we control. It's the market, and it's supply and demand.
So let's talk about that. $150 a ton that you are spending right now to offload paper materials. And this is not contaminated paper material. This is good paper material. If you were to put that in the incinerator, which is what EcoMaine does with trash, correct? And I jump in if I'm getting anything wrong. How much would it cost you then?
Well, you know, the price of landfilling or incinerating or putting material through the waste energy facility does vary, particularly on landfill rates. I argue that it's still beneficial to recover recyclable materials, even in a down market, because we don't have the space in our landfills, ultimately our landfills, to store waste. And really, landfilling is a forever proposition. Once you put those that paper and the metal and the glass and the cans into a landfill, it's there forever. And you're not moving those mountains of trash. And so I would argue it's still better putting that those materials to use, even though in some cases it may cost you more today, because the market can change. If China jumps back into the market, and nobody really knows if they ever come back to the market, but if they come back to the market and the domestic market gets stronger again, things could turn around. And if we're sending everything to the landfill, it would be very difficult to bring those materials back. It's taken us 25 years to get this material out of the waste stream, out of the landfills. I don't want to go back there again because we've already made a lot of progress over the last 25 years.
Okay, well, we're talking about recycling on Maine Calling. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Victor, I think a lot of people have been trained to learn to look at the numbers on the bottom of a, you know, a plastic bottle or a can or something like that, and keep track of what they can recycle and what they can't, or at least know that those numbers are there. Is what your member communities accept changing, or is it pretty much the same as it's always been?
It's changing. Quite a few of the towns, you know, we started a few years back doing what they call 3 through 7. So if the item had a 3 right up through a 7, they could recycle it. We were actually getting paid a little bit of money for that, you know, $30-$40 a ton. And then when the whole thing with China and, you know, shutting the gate, as so to speak, it was costing us $100 a ton sometimes to move that. So like Kevin said before, it's hard to go back to paying a lot of money when you used to get paid for it. So we see some of that being dropped from the programs. They're going back to the one that moves the easiest, which is the number 2 bottles. And some of them do the number 1 also, which is the clearer bottles. But I think the towns don't get a lot of that, the ones we serve, because we have the bottle bill. And most of the number 1 ends up, you know, back at the redemption center.
Kevin, I know that EcoMaine has just launched a big public relations campaign to try to get people more educated about what can and can't go in the recycling. And I think some people are going to be surprised. I think a lot of people believe that if it's plastic, it can be recycled. But that's not the case, especially plastic bags, right?
Right. And we're asking everybody to ask themselves, which bin should I put it in? So at that moment that they're either throwing it away in the trash or putting in the recycling bin, we're really trying to get them to ask themselves, which bin should I put it in? Because there's a lot of things that people want to recycle that aren't recyclable. And all that does is cost basically our communities more money to take those materials out. So plastic, I mean, we take plastic containers labeled, as Victor said, 1 through 7, but it must be a container. It can't be a bag. It can't be flexible packaging. It can't be a pouch. And the packaging over the last 20 years has really changed. When you think about it, we used to buy laundry detergent in a powder in a box. Well, go try to find a box these days, a powder. I mean, they're hard to find. Then we transition to the bottle, the big jug of liquid detergent. And now we're actually transitioning off of that. And on the store shelves, you'll see you have a choice. You can buy the jug of detergent, or you can buy a bag or a pouch of detergent with individually wrapped little detergent pieces. So the packaging has changed over time, and trying to keep up with the recyclability of that packaging is a problem. We call it flexible packaging, and it's not really all that easily recyclable.
Interesting, because the jug is probably more recyclable than the flexible packaging. The flexible packaging probably is easier to pack onto trucks and takes up less counter space, so there's an advantage to that as well.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's cheaper, and it's cheaper to transport, but it causes havoc for recycling facilities.
And I've been to your facility. I've seen those plastic bags tangled up in the gears. I mean, it's not just that you don't want them. You really don't want them.
Yeah, the only place for that is at the waste energy facility. We'll burn it, and at least we'll generate electricity from it. But that's about all it's good for.
Victor, what kind of products are your members having trouble with? What do you really want people to stop putting in the recycling bin?
Okay, we have a couple things. The beer and soda boxes, it's what they call wet strength, and I tell people as an example, you can put that out in a mud puddle and sit it there for a month, and you'll take out the same size. It'll look just the same as it went in. You take like a cereal box, you put that in that same mud puddle or water bucket, it'll almost immediately start breaking down. So we were getting away with putting an amount of those in over the years, and now that the supply is, there's so much to choose from, the mills are starting to step back and say, hey, we don't want that stuff anymore. Well, we never really did. But now we're willing to tell you, you know, you can't come here anymore.
That's interesting. Another, a beer or soda box is like, you know, like something a six-pack of Shipyard might come in, that kind of box. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. It's made so you can put it in a cooler or into a refrigerator, and it won't start breaking down, you know, with the change in temperature, you know, to cold, to hot, or whatever.
Great information. I've been putting those in the recycling. I won't now. What else were you going to say, Victor?
Well, I was going to say, I don't want to pick on baby food, but I've seen, like Kevin said, those little pouches, and they'll be marked. These are recyclable, and they might be recyclable somewhere, someday, but it kind of confuses the public when they look at that and say, well, this says it's recyclable. I can do that.
So generally speaking, if it's a pouch, it's not recyclable. Would you guys say that's a good rule of thumb?
Yeah, if it's flexible packaging, if it's plastic and it feels like a bag, and you can wrap it, roll it in a ball, then yeah, it's something we want in the trash.
Oh my! Well, guess what? We have to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to answer your questions. This is Maine Calling, and we're talking about recycling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine State Music Theater, presenting Beauty and the Beast, June 27th through July 14th. Tickets at msmt.org. And Friends School of Portland for preschool through grade 8, teaching peace in a changing world. More information at friendsschoolofportland.org.
On the next Fresh Air, the ongoing crisis with contaminated water and lead poisoning in Flint, Michigan. Terry Gross talks with pediatrician and public health advocate Mona Hannah Atisha about the research that led her to sound the alarm back in 2015. Nearly 3 years later, she still doesn't drink tap water there. She's now the director of an initiative to deal with the crisis. Join us.
You can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. June is once again Music That Moves Me month. Throughout this month, you'll hear the stories of neighbors from all around Maine about music that has been particularly inspiring in their life. And thanks to the Maine Community Foundation and Lee Auto Malls, we're also conducting another instrument donation drive for aspiring young musicians. For more information about the drive, to hear any of the broadcast segments, to post your own story, or to learn how you can contribute next year, please visit mainpublic.org and click on Events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, recycling. Joining me in the studio, Kevin Roach, who is CEO of Eco Maine, and in our Bangor studio, Victor Horton, Executive Director of the Maine Resource Recovery Association. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number is 1-800 399-3566, our email address. And if you send an email, please have a brief email, is talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Kevin, before the break, we were talking about things the recyclers don't want. Victor mentioned that a lot of his communities do not want beer and soda boxes. But to be clear, if you're in the Eco Maine area, if you're in the greater Portland area, one of the 74 communities, you do accept those.
Yeah, any kind of, if it's a paper box or a cardboard box, we'll take that. Our real problem is things that are non-fiber, that are non-recyclable. I mean, just plain trash. If we can get the residents to keep their trash separated from the recyclables, that's our goal. Styrofoam is another huge problem. We don't want the styrofoam in there, whether it's just styrofoam packaging or styrofoam cups or things like that. And then diapers and hoses and all those things that people want to recycle but just aren't recyclable. And the key is all you have to do is you can download. We have an app. It's our Recyclopedia. And when in question, you can go right to the Recyclopedia, put it in there, the item that you have. It'll tell you whether it's recyclable or not. And if it's not recyclable, what to do with that material.
Okay, I'm going to throw one at you before we go to calls, though. What about paper towels, napkins, tissues?
Soiled paper. We don't want soiled paper. So, you know, if you can think of a napkin or a paper towel, I mean, that's been soiled. That's why you're throwing it away. And we don't want that material. It's not clean paper. You can't make paper from that material if it's been soiled.
What if it's just kind of you had the napkin in your lap and...
Then use it again.
Okay. Good answer.
Yeah, good one.
Okay, we'll go to, and I do need to mention, and I really would love to mention, that our videographer, Brian Bouchard, went out to Eco Maine a couple weeks ago and filmed the process there. So if you'd like to see how a high-tech single sort operation works, please go to our Facebook page or our webpage and check that out. We're going to go to Ryan, who's calling from Scarborough. Hi, Ryan. Go ahead.
Hey, really interesting talk. I'm psyched you guys are doing this. And I just wanted to put it out there, see what these guys thought, or if it is even a remotely possible thing to treat our high-end plastics like polyethylene and, you know, HDPE, that sort of stuff, like we treat our metals, where, you know, there's a, for copper, people try to pull copper out of wherever they can to get money for it. But we don't do that with any other material. And it seems like, you know, on a much lesser scale, if you gave a price per pound for different types of plastic, that people would clean up our oceans and our coastlines and everything just to get a little bit of money for it. It incentivized people like fishermen and other, you know, workers on the coast to not just dump their waste, but to recycle it.
Sure, Victor. Is this something that's being discussed in the industry?
A few years back, somebody in the Bangor area was trying to set up a redemption center to take in plastic and that kind of stuff. But with the market, it changes, you know, quite often. It could end up, you know, not paying very much. So if someone collected a bunch and then put the bales together, by the time they get it to their market, they may end up losing money.
All right. Well, Ryan, thanks for your call. We'll move on to Tracy, who's calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Tracy. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've just come off a time of the Recycling Committee in Cape Elizabeth, and much as what you've been talking about here is the challenges a customer or consumer education with regards to what to put in and what not to put in. And clearly, one of the initiatives we had was to try to remove food waste, because that's a lot of tonnage going up to Eco Maine that's just not necessary. So my question really is, what is the single best thing that consumers can do to remove, either tonnage or hazardous waste from our waste streams? What are your panelists finding?
Well, food waste. I mean, food waste is one that most people can manage on their own in their own backyard. So if you can do backyard composting with your own food waste, you've really solved your own problem, your own waste problem. So we encourage that first and foremost. We are working on several pilot initiatives associated with recovering food waste. Food waste is about 25% of the waste stream, so it's a big one. But it's more challenging because it comes with the ick factor, what we call the ick factor. It gets smelly, it attracts bugs. bugs, fruit flies, things like that. So it is more challenging, and it is because it's more challenging, it's more costly. So we're doing that's in our feasibility studies, and my hope is, you know, over the next 10 years we will have an economically viable solution for food waste. We're already doing food waste mostly from commercial sources, grocery stores, restaurants, and things like that.
All right. Thanks for your question, Tracy. Rick on Facebook says, several local recycling facilities here in my area of Washington County are no longer accepting plastics of any kind, as well as newspaper, mixed paper, and glass. I had been holding and sorting these periodically. Are you saying this all goes into the waste stream now? Very little has been said about this in the media. Victor?
Yeah, he's absolutely right, which is unfortunate. Probably one of the best things he could do is try to get on his local recycling committee and, you know, try to get that changed. You know, some of the plastics are very easily sold to markets all over the country. Other things, like I said before, the mixed paper, yeah, it's going to cost a little bit to get rid of it now, but maybe in a year they'll be paying money for it again.
Yeah, and if I could just jump in, you know, we're still encouraging everyone in our member communities to continue to recycling, to continue to recycle. The only problem, the challenge that we're having is with this mixed paper, and because as I mentioned before, newspapers are pretty much out of the mix now. It's what's left behind is this very dirty, undesirable mixed type of paper. But as far as metals and aluminum and steel cans, bimetal cans, and even plastics, particularly plastics number one and two, we're getting good value for that material, and we're encouraging our member communities to continue recycling those items.
We have an email from Gregory. Every day I go to my mailbox and I'm inundated with junk mail. Flyers from Shaw's, Hannaford's, Cabela's, Lowe's, Home Depot, to just name a few. I buy a small piece of chicken at my supermarket and it comes with styrofoam, plastic wrap, and that weird piece of paper wafer that sits on the styrofoam. So much needless waste. Victor, thoughts on Gregory's email?
Well, we had the same situation. We were getting giant catalogs about every couple of weeks from a company. So I grabbed the back page of it, called them up and said, hey, stop sending us three or four different copies of this. We shop online, we buy your stuff, but we don't want to just keep throwing the stuff in our recycling bin and overloading the town. So there are some websites, I'm not sure what they are right now, but you can go and like stop unwanted catalogs, and it's pretty hard to stop the credit card offers, because, you know, they're making money to get you to go to their credit card. So it's pretty hard to change that one.
And the consumer's purchasing power is really huge. You don't buy and they won't produce. So I would encourage you to use your purchasing power and advocate others to use their purchasing power to demand less packaging.
We'll go to John, who's calling from Portland. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi there, Jennifer. I want to know your guest's opinion on a big picture solution to the whole plastics issue. It seems to me the market's only making it worse, that we're awash in plastic. And, you know, some people keep grappling with how we end single-use disposable plastic. You know, should restaurants stop giving out plastic straws unless, you know, people actually ask for them? More of us need to bring refillable coffee containers and beverage containers. People in southern Maine should be drinking our excellent tap water instead of bottled water. Are these all possibilities? I also know some people would like to-go containers to all be reusable, and we have a system where they go out and they somehow come back and the restaurant cleans them and uses them again. Any of these feasible in the eyes of your guest?
Certainly. We wholeheartedly subscribe to the waste hierarchy, which is reduce, reuse, and then recycle. So, yes, you know, reducing is something that's most important. Straws, you know, are they even necessary? And so we subscribe to that. But, you know, hard to put bans on those. I think some communities have considered bans on those types of items. And then reusable, you know, the reusable shopping bags. Being in the industry for 25 years, we've made huge strides in the reusable shopping bag. That's been faster than I ever envisioned it being. So many, many communities have really pushed for the reusable shopping bag. And that's working. And the bags are now off the market.
Thanks for your question, John. We'll go to Cersei in Portland. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. You were commenting earlier on flexible plastics, and I recently had a conversation with a manager at Hannaford asking him pointed questions about their ability to capture films and soft plastics in their recycle container that's placed in the vestibule. You know, as you are walking into the store, you can drop off your accumulated shopping bags if you choose to get the plastic ones when you're checking out. And he was very clear that they can accept the grocery bags, cereal bags, frozen vegetable bags, Ziploc bags, clean wrappers, dry cleaning bags, wrappers around toilet paper. All of those types of soft plastics can be brought to the store. They have their own separate waste stream. So I was noticing that my trash is primarily full of that type of plastic. So I'm delighted that Hannaford can take those plastics, and it helps their bottom line.
Cersei, thanks. And Kevin, where does the plastic that Hannaford collects go?
A big company that takes film is Trex, and they make the plastic lumber. So you can, if you go to Home Depot or Lowe's and something like that, you can buy plastic lumber that's made from plastic film. But there's so many different types of plastic film out there. There's multi-polymer, like the salad bags. They may not be just one plastic. They may be three or four or five different plastics all in that same bag. A Ziploc bag, the zipper is a different type of plastic than the bag itself. So those all present challenges to those markets. And it's a lower-end market. And the more you mix plastics together like that, the lower the value of the material and the less recyclable the material is. So yes, we encourage, if you're willing to take your plastics to a drop-off location that's willing to take film, great, but not everybody's willing to do that. And we would never want you to make a special trip, because remember, plastics are very light. There's no weight to them. So we'd never want you to take your shopping bag full of plastic bags for a special trip back to the grocery store, or using an excuse to go get a gallon of milk, because I think what you've basically wasted the benefit, the environmental benefit of recycling that bag of bags that doesn't weigh anything.
But if you're going to the grocery store anyway.
If you're going for your weekly grocery shopping and you're doing it anyway, that's key. But don't use that as the excuse to go get your jug of milk.
Okay, thanks, Cersei, for calling. Peregrine emails us, after the previous winter, I have quite an accumulation of plastic wood pellet bags. The local recycling center does not accept them, even though there is a 4LDPE on the bag. Any suggestions? Thank you. Victor, would you suggest that she find
the
Hannaford?
Yeah, I'll grab this one.
Yeah, go ahead.
We've talked to the Hannaford and the folks that Kevin mentioned down at Trex, and what they tell us the best to do is make sure they're empty, of course, get all the dust and the pellets out. But if you put those into another pellet bag, you can take those to your local Walmart or, Hannaford. You have to shove them in their bin, but they are recyclable because they have a number 4 marked on them most of the time.
Great.
It's just you can't put them in with your normal single stream or your normal, regular sorted recycling.
That's great information. We do have to take another quick break. Before we do so, a word about tomorrow's program. Join me for a conversation about vineyards and winemaking in Maine. Share your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're talking about recycling today. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com. Ollie's Trolley, offering narrated daily tours of Cadillac Mountain. Tickets and more information at ollie'strolley.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, offering a variety of home equity loan options to help with spring projects. Bangor Savings, you matter more.
Coming up on the next Commonwealth Club program, hear from the contributors to a new book that uses photographs to capture the risks taken by Americans who have experienced hatred, oppression, or bigotry because of their skin color, gender, or beliefs. Best-selling author Rick Smolin and his contributors discuss the power of civic activism, where America is today, and what's at stake in the future, on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock.
Big police departments are relying more and more on data to decide where to patrol and whom to keep an eye on.
These are people that we are going to be looking out for in the area who have been our chronic offenders.
But some worry data-driven policing is just a high-tech cover for old-fashioned profiling. I'm Audie Cornish. A look at how it's playing out in L.A. this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, all about recycling, my guests are Victor Horton, the Executive Director of the Maine Resource Recovery Association, and Kevin Roach, CEO of Eco Maine. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. If all of this is leaving your head spinning, Kevin, what you want to say is go to the Recyclopedia, right?
That's right, because the Recyclopedia on our website, www.ecomaine.org, will tell you what's recyclable, what's not, and if it's not recyclable, it'll tell you what to do with that material. And if it's not on the Recyclopedia, there's a space there. You can type it in, and we'll find an answer for you.
All right. Well, Leah on Facebook says, if your town transfer station accepts certain plastic numbers, like, say, 5, are there specific 5s that are still not accepted? I heard you mention plastic lids. Victor?
Most of the towns that accept the number 5, they call it tubs and lids. So normally they would take the tubs and lids in that same bin. I want to just quickly answer a question that was asked before, but I couldn't find the website. It's called plasticfilmrecycling.org. If you have your bags and you want to know where to take them, you can put in your zip code, and it also gives you a list of what they take, and it's quite a list.
Oh, that's a great resource, plasticfilmrecycling.org. We'll also put that link on our Facebook page and web page. We will go to Tim, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. I have a question about the food waste. Now, it's surprising not to hear any mention of a couple of services that pick up food waste, at least in southern Maine, which is like the Garbage to Garden, and I think it's called We Compost is another one. This seems really effective at a residential scale, but I think it's only in here in southern Maine. What I wonder is what holds back a company like Eco Maine from sort of doing that on a larger scale, and you know, why does it seem to be functioning for like a small company and we can't go at a statewide scale or something like that?
Yeah, Tim, thanks for your call. We have done a Maine Calling program on compost, but it was a few months ago. And Kevin, you said that you all are experimenting with doing some food waste composting, correct?
That's right. South Portland tried a pilot project, and so did Scarborough. So there is a lot of interest, but it really comes down, Tim, to cost. I think the subscription models that are out there, We Compost It and Garbage to Garden, you know, they're $15, $18 a month, and somebody's got to pay that. So in this case, the subscriber, the homeowner's paying that. We can do it on a town-by-town basis or a whole regional basis, but there is a cost associated with doing that, and I think that's the barrier right now, is overcoming the cost of collection. We don't want to necessarily add another truck to the street. We already have one truck picking up, and you know, for garbage, and sometimes there's a second truck for recyclables, and that's sometimes it's the same truck, but what we don't want to do is add a second or third truck to go by everybody's home. So that's what we have to overcome.
Interesting. Now, I remember I was in San Francisco a couple years ago, and people do put out their food waste. There's one more bin than we have in most communities in Maine. Do they have special trucks that have different sections, or do they send out two trucks?
Yeah, technology is improving, and what we're looking at is how do we pick up all, you know, food waste, recyclables, and trash with one truck. To me, that is the path forward. That's the sustainable model.
All right. Lisa on Facebook says, a quick tip to reduce bugs and smell from uncompostable. I'm going to start over again. A quick tip to reduce bugs and smell from uncompostable food waste. Put it in a freezer, not the garbage, until dump day. So thanks for your tip, Lisa. We'll go to Eva, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Eva. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I am traveling a bit in Europe, and mostly Germany. And of course, plastic bags have been charged there for, I think, 15 or 20 years. People pay between 15 cents to 35 cents per bag. But what, and I think everybody knows that, and we are doing this now too. But all the packaging on stuff like vegetables or cereal boxes, the store has to take back. So people, after they're done with shopping, there's a table and you stand there and you unpack your stuff and take only what you want. And they are large containers and you leave all the packaging, the plastic, the paper that you don't want, obviously, behind. And they are obligated to take it back.
Interesting,
I think that
yeah.
would be the thing to do here.
Thank you, Eva, for your call. Victor, any movement in that direction? Anyone talking about it?
I don't see a lot of movement that way. People like to do what they want here. You know, we like to be independent, and it's got to come from way up above. It's got to be legislative in order to, you know, get any kind of an action on that plan.
And the other thing I think we need to be sensitive is we don't want every individual, every household transporting their own trash around town, because there's an environmental cost and impact on that too. And that's why we have, in the more densely populated areas, that's why we have trash collection, because we don't want each individual household carting their own trash to the dump or to the grocery store because of the costs associated with that.
Eva, thanks for your call. Stephen in Scarborough says, I hear that the glass I put in my recycling bin ends up in a landfill and is not recycled. Is this true?
Not in Eco Maine. If you're in an Eco Maine community, we're recovering the glass, and we use the glass. We don't turn glass into new glass bottles, but we do use it as an aggregate material. So we basically crush the glass into almost a sand product, and we use it as a mix for gravel and other types of applications that are similar.
Interesting. Kelly calling from Lincoln County. Go ahead, Kelly.
My question is, what do we do with the absorbent pad in meat trays?
Victor?
That's for the garbage, really. There's no recycling efforts that I know of for those meat tray pads or, you know, the pet pads or any of that kind of stuff.
And we're really fortunate, again, in our EcoMaine communities to have a place for those materials if we have to have those materials. If you put it in the trash, it's going to be burned at the waste energy facility, and at least we're getting some energy out of that material as opposed to storing it in the landfill.
All right, Kelly, thanks for your call. We'll go to Barbara calling from Prospect Harbor. Hi, Barbara. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Barbara, and I have an opinion. I think that the packaging industry should have some responsibility in this use of things that we have to get rid of. And as for me, I'm older, and I can't open most of these packages that things are sent in. So I wanted to hear what your people thought. Thank you.
Yeah, we don't. Unfortunately, we don't have much control over the packaging industry. And so we really have to rely on residents, again, to use their purchasing power to force for better ways of packaging. And it is working to some extent.
Yeah, packaging is a lot smaller in a lot of cases than it takes up a lot less room than it used to.
And that's very much the case. And I think over time, most companies now have an eye on the environment when it comes to packaging. There's still lots of room for improvement, but it is improving.
All right, Barbara, thanks for your call. Nissa on Facebook says, I am a professional dog walker, and I hate that poop bags are plastic. I've heard that biodegradable poop bags aren't much better. What are your guest thoughts on how to help out beyond inventing something on my own?
Wow, Vic, how about you?
I'm thinking about that one. Pet waste is not normally put in the compost either because it's contaminated, and I guess that's one way to reuse your shopping bags. If you have to get them, reuse those bags.
Okay. We're going to go to Charlie calling from the Maine Surfers Union in Portland. Hi, Charlie.
How's it going?
Great. Go ahead.
That Surfrider is putting an information to try to ban single-use plastic straws in the city of Portland due to roughly around 500 million plastic straws get used every day in the U.S., and you can't recycle them.
Okay, so there's an effort underway to ban them in Portland. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, is that for a way, on a way to ban them in Portland? Just the single-use plastic ones. We want to implement having compostable straws, or a couple other companies use metal straws and stuff like that, just to kind of get away from, because straws can't be recycled, unfortunately.
Sure. Well, thanks for your call, Charlie. And Kevin, this touches on something that's sort of a really big conversation worldwide, talking about all the plastics in the ocean. And in fact, last week when I was in Iceland, I was watching the BBC, and BBC has this great big effort to get people to use less plastic. But what I'm wondering, if I use a plastic straw in Portland, Maine, where Charlie's calling from, and I throw it in the trash, that's not ending up in the ocean, is it?
No, it would end up at our waste energy facility. But, you know, plastic straws, are, you know, there's plenty of plastic straws that are ending up in the ocean, and obviously that's a real problem. Small plastic material is a huge problem because it's really becomes a litter problem, and it's not recyclable, and we don't really want to see that in the recycling bin for sure. At least in the waste bin, in your waste bag, it will be processed at the waste energy facility for energy recovery.
The plastics that are ending up in the ocean are not ending up predominantly from communities like ours that have a modern waste facility. They're coming from other places.
Yeah, I can assure you of that. If it's coming into it, if it's getting to our facility, then it is being recovered.
All right, Charlie, thanks so much for your call. We're going to go to Jean in Howland. Hi, Jean. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I've been saving newspapers for years and years. And I save a grocery bag full of papers and take them to recycling. Now, did I understand say you don't collect newspapers anymore? And if you, here's an idea to for people that burn wood, why couldn't they make the logs using packed, compacted paper? And it seems so years ago there was a recipe in the paper using soap and soak them in water and roll them and all that stuff. But anyway, am I saving the newspapers for nothing? And if I am, what do I do?
Victor, is Howland one of the communities that you work with?
Howland is currently, but they are switching to single sort. But I think the confusion was newspapers are very recyclable for Kevin's operation and for all over the state. What's happening is people aren't reading newspapers as much, you know, the paper, they're reading it online. So we're seeing a lot less available. You know, there's a local mill, Hudamaki. They love newspaper because it helps them, you know, make new form fibers.
Right. So Hudamaki makes Chinette plates and things like that. So,
right.
So the answer to Gene is yes, very much so. Your newspapers are welcome at your recycling facility.
Yes. Keep recycling the newspapers.
And what's interesting is 10 years ago, we sold all of our paper to Maine mills because, you know, there was a market for it. Now, you know, there's so few mills that are still buying post-consumer recycled paper.
When you say you sold it to paper mills.
Paper mills.
Yeah.
So it stayed right in the state. But when the paper mills left, by and large, and there's still a few left, but when they left, that's when China was there to pick up that market. And that's why many of us ended up selling to export markets that were paying a premium for this paper.
All right. Well, Jean, thanks so much for your call. Ann says, our local municipality used to recycle all numbered rigid plastics. Now only two can be recycled. Why that particular change? Is this what we were talking about at the beginning of the program, Victor, because China is not taking what it used to?
That's that's part of it. But rigid plastic, you got to understand, it's, you know, it's rigid. It's big plastic. Some of the folks, they can't put it in their smaller balers. And the market for that kind of dried up this winter, and it was a negative to move it. It's just starting to come around now. But in order to make, say, one bale of rigid plastic to put on a truck that needs possibly 40 bales, it might take as much as a 40-yard roll-off container, which just, you know, for the general public looking at that, it would be like maybe half the size of a tractor trailer. You need that much of loose material just to make one bale. So they probably made a financial decision that we don't have the time or the manpower to bale the stuff anymore.
All right. An email from C. Maine law requires that any retail location that gives plastic bags at the point of sale must offer a container to collect those bags and send them for recycling. Interesting information. We've gotten a lot of tips and resources mentioned on today's program, from Recyclepedia to PlasticFilmRecycling.org. Those will all be on the Maine Calling Facebook page and the Maine Calling webpage. Kevin and Victor, thank you so much for being here today. Kevin Roach, CEO of Eco Maine. Victor Horton, Executive Director of the Maine Resource Recovery Association. Nikki Shields ran the board today, and we had additional help from George Thomas in Bangor. You can find links, former shows, archived material at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast tonight again at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Maine Vineyards. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.